Individuals, Journalism, and Society by Stephen B. Waters, copyright 2010. Introduction. Hi, I'm Stephen Waters, and this book is about character, life, and other things worth knowing. If you're looking for life lessons that are brief and to the point, the film Animal House has the answer. Quote, "Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son," unquote. A somewhat more leisurely but equally entertaining read, The Virginian, was published in 1902. The best-selling book by Owen Wister described life on a frontier that disappeared around 1890. Nothing in the Virginian's schooling, religion, or upbringing explained how he became the honorable man readers admire and wish to emulate. 25 years later, H.L. Mencken, the great American political commentator, wrote a 3-volume set, American Language. When a reporter asked him, as an expert on words, what was the most important word, Mencken replied, "Honor. If you do what's honorable, you will never be wrong." Now, schools offer citizenship courses, but they are ineffective, and learning to be a citizen, a member of a city, requires obedience, not character. Schools offer social studies, but sociability is not character. Some schools teach ethics, but virtue-based ethics tend to select character traits that are popular rather than explain what makes them virtuous. Whatever character is taught, little is learned and the absence goes mostly unnoticed. Practical experience in commercial markets can teach about character. Such things as typically slip through the cracks of subject-oriented schooling. Why? Suppose you have a car. If you know a great deal about that car, are you educated? Suppose you study physics of cars, Newton's first law that cars in motion tend to stay in motion, or chemistry of cars, rapid oxidation of complex hydrocarbons releases CO2 and water vapor that expand against a piston to push a car forward. Do you know enough to drive? Suppose you study mathematics of cars. A car with a 10-gallon tank that gets 25 miles per gallon can travel 250 miles before refueling. Or the history of cars, that Carl Benz invented the modern motor car in 1885. Do you know enough to drive? Suppose you study art of cars. Uncluttered, simple designs make cars more appealing. Or language of cars, that a bonnet and a boot are a hood and a trunk. Or music of cars, learning to play She's Real Fine, My 409. Do you know enough to drive? Suppose you study teaching techniques, that graphic organizers and testing rubrics improve the success of studying cars. Suppose you study critical thinking, that metacognitive strategies increase one's understanding of cars. At the end of the day, through layers of educationists, administrators, teaching certifications, mandated curricula, standardized testing, whole language learning, classroom design directives, contract provisions, political correctness, lunch menu restrictions, and everything piled on everything else, do you know enough to drive? The car you need to learn to drive is you. Do you know enough to live wisely? Is seldom addressed, often pinned under a mountain of evidence dumped by credentialed educators to prove their worth. Back to basics? Not really. Job skills? Those will follow naturally. Scholasticism is as brittle today as when it took Socrates' life, drove Francis Bacon to pen Novum Organum, or led Matthew Arnold to challenge school regulators. Each of them challenged individuals to think and to doubt. If people concentrated on simple ideas that matter, we could spend a lot less on credentialed acolytes in their official schoolhouse temples. Students find their own way when nudged with good questions. What can you know? How should you behave? How should you interact with others? Such questions illuminate golden threads of simple wisdoms across history, where great thinkers turned keen intellects to dealing with the simple daily problems of living. Simple wisdoms ignite the spark of self-regulated learning. As character is mastered, other worthwhile subjects take care of themselves. The busy that people are is not the busy people need to be. Looking at things slightly differently helps reduce life's complexity, increase clarity, foster cooperation, and create character. This book, Individuals, Journalism, and Society, offers a practical perspective. It describes a newspaper publisher's election day, 2008, hour by hour, overlaid with decades of the 20th century on one hand and the march of several centuries of culture on the other. Described as deep, The book is more accurately conversation thick with accessible, useful ideas about what you can know, how to behave, and how to interact with others. There are 19 chapters. Chapter 0, the preface, to show what is at risk. Chapter 1, 6 a.m., on the fog of consciousness to show that consciousness is ephemeral and our choice. Chapter 2, 7 a.m., on footprints in literature to show that novels mirror culture. Chapter 3, 8 a.m., the 1880s, on modernity and self-doubt, to help distinguish institutions that work from those that don't. Chapter 4, 9 a.m., the 1890s, on journalism, narratives, and belief, to show different ways journalism fails. Chapter 5, 10 a.m., the 1900s, on art, consciousness, and society, to urge people toward consciousness of consciousness. Chapter 6, 11 a.m., on schooling children, to show that character begins with simple lessons in everyday life. Chapter 7, 12 noon, on exploring character, to show most efforts at teaching character are misdirected and to offer a useful alternative. Chapter 8, 1 p.m., the 1910s, on hope and reality, to show that where we think we are is not where we are. Chapter 9, 2 p.m., the 1920s, on politics and post-World War I modernism, to show that our first attempts to recover our thought didn't work. Chapter 10, 3 p.m., the 1930s, on economics and citizenship, to show what works in practice is broader than what is regularly taught. Chapter 11, 4 p.m., the 1940s, on history and philosophy after World War II, to show the collapse of institutions we depend on. Chapter 12, 5 p.m., the 1950s, on scholarship and moral ambiguity, to show academics how to pick up the pieces. Chapter 13, 6 p.m., the 1960s, on religion and traditions, to show that religion is ineffective between cultures. Chapter 14, 7 p.m., the 1970s, on literature evolving, to expose relativism. Chapter 15, 8 p.m., the 1980s, on empires and language to show the danger of loose language skills. Chapter 16, 9 p.m., the 1990s, on a long march through the culture to show the battle for civilization is ongoing. Chapter 17, 10 p.m., the 2000s, on Rust Never Sleeps, to show that the present isn't safe simply because you live here. Chapter 18, 11 p.m., the 2010s, on pivot points, to regain strength and purpose. Chapter 19, 12 midnight, on the dawn of a new day, to show there is hope. Preface. It's Election Day, 2008, but the change people hope for is not the change they need. Because there was a need to think better to survive, modernist author Virginia Woolf claimed in 1923 that on December 10th, 1910, the world had changed. She was premature. The world would actually begin to change 100 years later, on December 10th, 2010. As accessible simple wisdoms empower people, character becomes easier to develop. New metaphors encourage processes kids understand, admire, and wish to emulate in a deeper way. And none too soon. Journalism suffers from pervasive fog, consciousness slips away, schools lose traction, character develops by chance, politicians play games, economists forget what works, history and philosophy drift, scholarship loses perspective, religion and tradition stall at cultural boundaries. Misbehavior threatens society's fragile fabric. Literature and language languish as destroyers march through civil institutions in a world made more dangerous by scientific progress. Fortunately, all it takes is a change of mind. You are the main character of this book. Your experience shows patterns that can nudge your thought towards strong and useful character. And joy. People seldom get to revel in history to discover golden threads of simple wisdom. Modern, postmodern, and postcolonial literary styles that preoccupied 20th century fiction fail to offer a way out of the funhouse. This book avoids such styles, marking the trail back to what matters using Socratic dialogues indented to label different speakers. The chapters provide one order, but read them according to your interests. Try 12 noon for character. 2 p.m. for politics, or 5 p.m. for practical lessons. Dedicated to my wife Wendy and Sarah and Brad, they are the reason to try.